it, baby. It's just the world is kinda crazy, baby. Ain't no pretty way to paint it, baby. Don't cry, dry your eyes. September 11th, I woke up about 7 a.m. West Coast time, French toast and my turkey bacon. Taking my time, awake and turning my TV on. To my surprise, saw what everybody in the world saw. Me and my children and my jizz were chilling. My son said, daddy, were there people in that building? A cold sweat, frozen with a lump in my chest. I heard his question, couldn't bring my lips to say yes to him. That night at my son's side, he cried and prayed for the ones who died in the World Trade. Palms to God, see the qualms with God. He just kept on pressing me, wanna know why. Then 1 week later, our bombs were dropped. We seeing them on CNN, they just won't stop. The infrared images of brutal attack. He said, daddy, now we killing them back. Right, right. I really wish I could explain it, baby. It's just the world is kind of crazy, baby. Ain't no pretty way to paint it, baby. Don't cry, dry your eyes. I really wish I could explain it, baby. It's just the world is kind of crazy, baby. Ain't no pretty way to paint it, baby. Don't cry. Why is the bomb always getting the last word? And why did our uncles have to molest her? And why did all them cops have to be shooting to kill? And why did all them priests have to act so ill? Tell me, why did James Byrd Jr. have to be touched? Tell me, why did Malcolm and Martin depart from us? Tell me, why did the sniper make that little boy shoot? And why is human life always denied to loot? Tell me, why did Mandela have to live in the cage? Why did my brother Sterling have to die at that age? Tell me, why did Reginald Benny deserve his fate? And why the can't love seem to defeat hate? Tell me, why is it so hard for all the children to eat? Why did Pac and Biggie Smalls have to fall in the street? Tell me, why did Jam Master Jay have to go that way? Please, what am I supposed to say to my kids when they say, I really wish I could explain it, baby. It's just the world is kinda crazy, baby. Ain't no pretty way to paint it, baby. Don't try, dry your eyes. I really wish I could explain it, baby. It's just the world is kinda crazy, baby. Ain't no pretty way to paint it, baby. Don't try, dry your eyes. Can't explain it, baby. Life is just really crazy. I mean, if it's world wars or the life of a little baby, we got more stores than they got rice under Buddha lazy. You live four scores and still it be driving you crazy. But for me, I try to see the bright side. Sometimes it be like the goodness be trying to hide or try to flee, but it can, it's deep inside. Sweetie, you be the light for others, make them believe in God.
Thanks for returning to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Best Hope for a Sustainable Future on Earth. Alan Weissman shows how education, women's equality, and family planning can curb poverty, thirst, hunger, and environmental destruction. Alan makes a strong case for slowing global population growth as a prerequisite for achieving a sustainable future.
When I went to the Vatican, the Pope had talked about, in an encyclical, he had said that there's enough food on the planet to feed everybody. And I went to ask him, I said, well, what does the Pope mean by everybody? Is he just talking about human beings, or is he talking about all those other species? So I reminded this cardinal I was kind of jousting with. Remember that story about Noah, when God decides to say, okay, we're going to save humanity, but what does he tell Noah? You also have to save all those animals too. We can't have a world without them. And the Vatican said, yeah, well, we don't look at biodiversity a lot, but you know, we could feed a lot of people. I said, what, but come on, we're going to have 2 billion more by the middle of this century. So they sent me to the centers of the Green Revolution in Mexico for corn and wheat and the Philippines for rice. They said they're coming up with all these transgenic plants that are going to feed us. And they're trying to hot rod photosynthesis down there, but they all told me that it's going to take 20 to 30 years, if they're capable of doing it, to enhance food production even more. In the meantime, 2 billion more people, so they're going to lose that race probably. But when you start thinking about what it takes, and this comes back to your animals here, 40% of the non-frozen earth is now devoted just to feeding one species. That's us. And that's what's pushing all these other species off the planet. We are now forcing an extinction of other species that the rate of which and the numbers of which have not been seen since that asteroid crashed into the Yucatan 65 million years ago and did away with all those big reptiles. At some point, something is going to give. And we're already seeing two of the species that most directly affect your life and mine, bees and bats, coming down severely right now. Now, they pollinate about one-third of the stuff that you eat, and me too. And come on, folks, this is logical, you know? We've got to interrupt this cycle somewhere. And like I say, this is the one that doesn't have any technological leaps involved. It also just makes tremendous sense. I go with scientists in Costa Rica into the coffee fields, and they find out that the coffee plants that are closest to remaining ribbons of rainforest have yields that are up to 60% higher than coffee plants a kilometer away. Why? Because birds, bats, and reptiles are either pollinating or they are consuming pests. This is our biggest pest control. You mentioned before about Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. And I start this book off with a bang. You know, we're all kind of emotional about Israel in the Western world, and three religions claim it. Nobody ever thinks of it as anything other than a religious issue or a political struggle. And, you know, why is Israel holding on to those West Bank settlements? You know, well, they're on top of wells, folks. That's where the main aquifer is. The British, before the State of Israel, the British ecologists who were in charge calculated that it could hold about 2.5 million people. That was the carrying capacity. David Ben-Gurion, the Zionist first president, argued, no, Jewish ingenuity can make the desert bloom. We can have more than twice that. We can fit 6 million people here. Today there are about 12 million people living between the Mediterranean and the Jordan, and it's going to be 21 million by the middle of this century. And believe me, they're not making water. Yes, they're desalinating, but there's limit. That takes a lot of energy. Then you get all this kosher sea salt. You can't sell it all, and and you can't dump it back in the ocean because it screws up, you know, marine ecology. The other issue, though, that no one ever realizes, that I didn't realize till I got over there, is the importance of that ecosystem, not just to Israel, but to the world. It is the major flyway of birds that migrate between Europe and Africa, both Eastern and Western Europe. They don't usually go over the Mediterranean except for up by the Strait of Gibraltar, because birds need thermals to carry them on those long trips, and you don't get them over open water. So that's my wife. I am not here. So a billion birds go back and forth. And those birds, why do they migrate? Because they go to where the food is so they can breed. They eat an enormous amount of mosquitoes and insects in Europe every year, and then they go down in Africa, do the same thing. We lose the wetlands of Israel and Palestine, and we lose that bird migration, and there's going to be an ecological catastrophe that we don't want to see happen in this land that we consider holy.
Thank you. We've got a little time for questions if you want. There's a couple of microphones over here if people want to ask them. And while we're moving over there, I just want to go back to tell you a little more about the book. It's 431 pages. It's pretty, a lot of intense stories, but just so beautifully written and quite a variety. There's a lot of bright spots.
I just want to interrupt Melanie on this. About the last 80 pages is the bibliography.
It's
in very small type. Yeah. Please don't be daunted by the thickness.
But there are just, it's just a treasure of international stories. So let's hear from you.
Thank you. Within the last year, Stephen Hawking said that we had about 1,000 years to get to another planet. Now, I'm not sure whether he was thinking that we could then repeat the destructive process on that one or just what he had in mind. But anyway, I'm interested in just your reaction to that comment.
Well, it's funny. You know, after the World Without Us, my agent said, you know, what's your next book going to be? And I was toying with this population idea. He says, oh, God, no, don't write about that. That's so depressing. He says, how about a book about colonizing other planets? And I said to him, I said, look, I grew up in science fiction. That stuff is fun. But I'm a journalist. I don't write fiction. And I know that we're not going out there to colonize anything. I mean, we couldn't even colonize Oracle and, you know, under those bubbles. It's just not going to happen. And even if it were going to happen, though, there's already talks about, you know, recent findings. I've got a journal paper in it about the amount of radiation between here and getting to Mars alone. And Mars would have to be terraformed. I mean, how are we going to build that stuff out there? Look, it's a nice idea, but it ain't going to happen. And numerically, if it were, we're talking about a tiny number of Homo sapiens. I'm hoping that none of us, first of all, I want everybody alive to have a long life. I just want us to recruit fewer people to take our places in the future so we can continue to have a life on this planet, because this is the only one that we know how to get to. Sir.
Yes. First of all, thank you very much for what you have said. It's very important, and I do agree with you 100% that population explosion since the Industrial Revolution is an extremely great concern. But I have to say that that is only one part of the problem, and you have not spoken about the other part. While the population is increasing, consumption per capita in the United States and around the world is increasing. This drives our economy. So you have an exponential rate of growth in the population, but you also have an exponential growth in consumption. And that means not only consumption in food, but also consumption with all the commodities we have. And of course, that commodity must be manufactured by using minerals and all other things.
Okay.
So, and then thirdly, is the wealthy part of the world is our habit of eating. Edward Wilson said, if we were to eat like the Chinese ate or the other people ate 50 years ago, we could feed 3 times as many people in the world. But the United States, for example, wastes $40 million in food by just throwing food away and the way we eat.
We've got a few more questions, but you've raised some really important points here. And I do address all that stuff at length in the book, but I can address the consumption one pretty quickly right here. In fact, Bill Maher asked me this question last night, the same exact question. I said, look, if I would have known how to solve consumption, I would have written a book about that. Anybody know how to solve consumption? I mean, do you really think that driving a Prius or using a compact fluorescent bulb is going to make a dent? We are all born, once again, here's the population curve, and we were all born here, and that's why we don't notice the problem. We were also all born addicted to energy. And when I'm talking about energy, it's not just the energy to power the lights and my microphone and all of our computers and all the cell phones out there that even the poorest people on Earth, who don't consume as much as Americans, but even in the poorest cities, they all now have cell phones and they're plugging in their chargers every night, just like you and me. Might be pirated electricity, but carbon's going up the chimney. All that stuff is going on. And the food that we grow, that nitrogen fertilizer, takes a lot of fossil fuels to make the stuff, both as its feedstock and also the energy to create it. And then when it breaks down, it creates more greenhouse gases. I mean, we eat oil. And I'm quoting Paul Ehrlich here, he says, there's just no condom for consumption. I mean, can we do better? Yes. I mean, the Europeans consume a lot less than Americans, and we have to start emulating them because the European lifestyle is one that we would all accept. And there's a calculation in the book done by some pretty eminent scientists about how many people on Earth living basically a European lifestyle could the Earth hold comfortably, and it comes out to about 2 billion. which is a lot less than we are, but that's pretty much what the population was before we started using nitrogen fertilizer. So if we phase it out gradually, because we all know the damage that it's doing, besides those greenhouse gases, it's, you know, it's poisoning our rivers, it's leaving dead zones the size of New Jersey and in the ocean at the mouths of the world's great rivers, screwing up soil. If we phase that out gradually over 2-3 generations, we'll be phasing population down gradually too, and we can start minimizing the number of consumers even as we try to bring our consumption into a much healthier level. But getting rid of it, I don't know how. Sure.
And this will be the last question.
Yeah. One of the things that blew me away when I was reading about Iran is that you have this, well, we have this myth at least about the Near East and the Middle East society of the authoritarian man and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so one of the pieces that I wonder if you have some observations is, like, obviously the conversation about how many children to have took that into consideration, and it wasn't what we expected. Did you talk to anybody who, you know, told you how the men reacted or how the conversation between the family and the wives?
You know, fortunately, men start to get it when they realize, you know, there's one Muslim man, it's in Pakistan, where he defies the rest of the village and takes his wife after the 11th child, and everybody's upset because he has three wives. He's supposed to have at least 21 children. He takes his wives to get them contraception. And he said, you know, he was ostracized until everybody started to notice that his wives look so much healthier. Mm-hmm. And the kids look so much healthier. And then people start to get it.
Buy into it.
Yeah. You know, there are two other Muslim countries that I'm aware of that I talk about in the book, Bangladesh and Tunisia, that are down below replacement rate now, just like Iran. It's cost effective for families. Mexico is very close to a replacement rate right now, and their cultural approach to this whole thing was soap operas. During the 1970s, when Mexico City was the biggest city in the world, and Mexico was so growing so fast, we have what we call the immigration problem here, because they couldn't afford to feed and house everybody. A TV director got together with the government, and they did this series of soap operas. It started out very subtly. Just, you know, the families with fewer kids seemed to be having a lot fewer problems than the families with a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. And then it got sort of put into the scripts where, you know, some woman is really, really tired. She wants to use family planning, and her husband, who is a macho, wants to have more kids. And they, you know, so for several episodes, they fight over this, and then he finally sees the light. You can see in the 10 years of that series, as viewers rose, population dropped 34%, fertility rates dropped 34% in Mexico, and there are ways to do this. You reach people at their cultural comfort zone, and just people get it. Men definitely get the idea that the money goes a lot farther when you only have a couple of kids to raise.
Hear great speeches and interviews at AXA Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
And thank you, everyone, for all the hands that have put this together. There's a drone in the air in Pakistan. Paramilitaries on Columbia plan. Samsara weavers hanging from a crane. Shell and Chevron in Ogoni domain. Rahm Emanuel can bully junior senators to vote for war in Afghanistan. And Gates and Clinton can rattle their sabers to make combat with Iran. Oh, you can feel how you will every time you see old glory unfurled. But these colors don't run. These colors don't run. These colors don't run the world. Obama says we've lost South America, but I can still find it on a map. He says we need 50,000 mercenaries so we can occupy Iraq. You can blockade the people of Cuba. You can blockade information flow. You can bomb Vietnam to the Stone Age and torture in Guantanamo. And you can feel how you will every time you see old glory unfurled. But these colors don't run. These colors don't run. These colors don't run the world. You can build a wall on the border with Mexico, build another in Palestine, build a wall in the minds of our people while the truth you undermine. You can love this country or leave it. You can wave the red, the white, and blue. You can get child labor at Walmart and when you wear those Nike shoes. And you can feel how you will every time you see old glory unfurled. But these colors don't run. These colors don't run. These colors don't run the world. Contras kill civilian populations, destroy their clinics and their schools, their cropland and water systems, till we decide which Somoza rules. You can say they hate our freedoms, but look at the damage that we've done to get every precious metal and fossil fuel and their labor under our thumb. And you can feel how you will every time you see old glory unfurled. But these colors don't run. These colors don't run. These colors don't run the world. Yeah, these colors don't run. These colors don't run. These colors don't run the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're like so many of us, you've tried every diet in the book. You've tried the South Beach diet, you've tried the Jenny Craig diet, even the Larry Craig diet. That's the one where you tap your foot repeatedly to burn those unwanted calories. But tonight, we here in the Capitol Steps are here to urge you to just give it up.
I've tried those low-fat diets, though mostly they're a sham. And after sex, I've longed to smoke a great big ham. So I thought that I'd try Atkins maybe for a week or two. But my calves grew fat, and now when I walk, they move. I wrecked my heart with Spam and Crisco, fried on a grill, they call to me. Now on my bathroom scale I climb. It shouts, hey, one at a time. What's smaller than my derriere? Delaware, my underwear's as large as Frisco. I tried to float the ocean.
Ted Kennedy. And as you may be aware, the Kennedy clan has been in the news again lately. Another scandal. But unlike the Republicans, we Democrats have proven that we are under the influence of something other than the lobbyists. And of course, the best thing about this scandal is that Rush Limbaugh has to keep his big mouth shut. My son made the news just the other day. He crashed his car in the Kennedy way. I thought I had a vote, was all he'd say. And the cops on the scene said, that's okay. And I feel so proud when he says to me,
I wanna be like you, Dad. I wanna be just like you.
Aristocrats is the cradle with a silver spoon. How about a scotch?
Dad, it's not even noon.
When's your next vote, son?
I don't know when.
We will have a cocktail then.
Dad, it doesn't mix with ambient. Well, I asked my dad if he was upset.
Well, at least when you crashed, you did not get wet.
Now I'm off to rehab, no need for alarm.
Perhaps the eighth time will be the charm.
When you see Pat and Ted, it is plain to see
my son is just like me.
The apple didn't stagger far from the tree.
Funny.
Kennedys are unstable, that is just a myth.
My little boy's a pint off the old fifth. When you're coming home, son?
I don't know when, but I will say to my chagrin, Dad,
we still drink less than the Bush twins.
That's all, folks.